All right, good morning, everyone. My name is John Bristow. I work for a company called Telerik. Hopefully some of you have heard of us. We're going to spend the next hour or so talking about building custom controls for Windows 8. Now, I've spent a little bit of time in this area being a former Microsoft employee, and I still get caught up on some of the code names. So what are we calling it now? Windows 8 Store Apps, is that right? Or Windows Store Apps? Metro, whatever. I'm going to call it Windows 8 Apps. That works for me. I hope it works for you. The title of this session is Create Your Own Lego. The reason for that, as you'll see in a second, is because it's an apt metaphor for describing how we build the building blocks of our applications. Hopefully you've had a great conference so far learning about Windows 8, learning about how to target XAML through a variety of different languages. In this session here, we're going to be spending a little bit of time looking at what's possible in terms of controls, as well as how you build them. We're not going to be spending a whole bunch of time looking at, you know, component licensing and things like that, but hopefully this will give you a bit of an idea of what you can do. So to start, I'd just like to share a little bit about myself. My wife and I recently moved to Australia from the snowy confines of Canada. Why did we do it? Well, as I was saying earlier, 8 months of snow tends to damp the spirits, but we were having a good time so far. My wife was born in Rotorua, but she moved to Canada when she was 2 years old. So if she's asked where she's from, she'll say Canada, but in her heart, she's a Kiwi. Prior to moving to Australia, my wife and I decided to embrace our heritage with this land, and we've made our sons dual citizens. So they are citizens of both New Zealand and Canada. So I feel a very warm appreciation for this land. So I would like to thank you for giving me a welcome, because this is my second time here. That's right. This gentleman here, for those watching this, the saying is I'm on my own. So yes, Canada and New Zealand, two countries bound together by a shared appreciation for not so great weather, a beautiful landscape, and of course a white hot rivalry with a neighboring country who claims to be better at your official sport, i.e. rugby. For us, it's the Americans, of course. They always seem to think that they can beat us in ice hockey. Of course, that is never the case. By the way, if anyone from Australian Customs and Department of Immigration is watching this, I would like just to now assert my love for my new home. I hope to get back into Australia when I'm on my flight later today. As a side note, I've played both ice hockey and rugby for many years, and I'm a huge All Blacks supporter. It brought me no joy, of course, to see them beat Team Canada in the World Cup, 79-15, I think the score was. But we had the best beers at the tournament. So the reason why I tell this story is because, like many of you, I'm a parent. And that being said, I'm disposed to a lot of means of distraction. That's just another way of saying it's you have toys and things that you can help your kids be engaged. And being a geek, I was naturally elated to see that my son gravitated towards Lego at a young age. And this is his version of the Mars rover. So we watched the landing of the Mars rover together online, and we decided to build one ourselves. I think this one would do a much better job, although the one they've done so far seems to be holding it up. But I tell you this not because it's unique. Rather, my story is not unique. For many of us, Lego is a shared experience. But as I say before, Lego is such an apt metaphor for how we build software today. And the reason why I say that is because there's a lot of similarities between Lego and software. So, as we know, Lego represents building blocks. And there are a lot of sets out there that you can grab off the shelf. Some are very highly customized. For those who are parents, you'll recognize Lego City. Ninjago is a very popular Lego set with my son these days. Also, some Lego is very basic. You know, the 2x2, 1x4 blocks, very, very basic. But you get some ones that are very complicated. Some Lego can be crappy, so there's some I hate to break this to you, but there is imitation Lego out on the marketplace that doesn't snap together really well, very much like software today. And like software, Lego can be difficult to work with, right? It doesn't always snap together very nicely, or they're stuck together, in some cases glued by the food that my son was eating. Also, Lego can be very painful. If anyone stepped on a 1x1 square, you'll know that experience is awful. And also, sometimes it can be painful to make things kind of fit together nicely. You're going for that huge, this is not a pile of Lego, this is a skyscraper. Can't you see it? But like everyone's collections, they're all different. And just like software, everyone builds software differently, everyone targets software differently. And so that being said, it's kind of an interesting sort of way of looking at the way in which we approach this problem. And then finally, of course, sometimes we implement hacks. We do as God intended. I would be remiss by not sharing with you that I have, yes, indeed, sawed Lego to make things look cooler, specifically wings of aircraft. So in this presentation, we're going to be discussing how to build your own pieces of Lego for Windows 8, arguably the biggest, most colorful piece of Lego Microsoft has ever produced, which is great. So in this presentation, to set your expectations, which is speaker or presenter speak for telling you what I'm going to say and what I'm not going to say, we're going to talk a lot about XAML. We're going to talk a lot about languages and in particular the projections supported by the Windows runtime. We're going to talk a little bit about designing for Windows 8. So for those of you who don't like design, who kind of naysay Photoshop and think those designers should just stick to sipping lattes and wearing black turtlenecks, I'm sorry to say we're going to have to think about our design. Building for touch and semantic zoom, targeting Visual Studio 2012 and Blend, targeting Windows runtime, which is different, yet similar in some respects, and then things to look out for, tips and tricks, and things we've learned at Telerik. As we'll talk about, we've built some pretty cool controls for Windows 8. Things I won't be covering, of course, component or control marketing, licensing, installation, the Windows 8 store, installing Windows 8, setting up Visual Studio, Kiwi beer, the Marmite shortage, I'm assuming that's been fixed, All Blacks versus the Wallabies, the Springboks, or the Pumas. I actually am looking forward to Saturday's game. All right, so with that being said, let's jump over to a demo. And if my AV is working correctly here, hey, look at that, the magic of software. All right, so I'm going to jump into Visual Studio here. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to create a new project. So out of the box, there's a number of different project template types that ship for Windows 8. We can go ahead and create things like a blank app, grid app, split app, etc., and control libraries. When targeting Windows 8 components and control libraries, you can also build out class libraries. These are Windows Store apps, and they have a specific purpose for tying in dependencies. But for all intents and purposes, I'm just going to create a blank app here. This is the sort of canonical presentation you'll see in most 200-level talks where people are presenting this for the first time. This will go ahead and do its thing, and then out will spit a beautiful design, including a WYSIWYG model. So we have our main page.xaml. For those who are in the room who have done Silverlight or WPF work, this is very familiar to you. So we'll bring up mainpage.xaml, and then from here, we can drag and drop controls onto the toolbox or incorporate them at the markup level. In order to build out a control, there's a lot of different ways to do it. Specifically, there's two common ways that you'll see. There's user controls and composite controls. And let's just take a look at one example of how to do that. So the way in which you can add a control to an existing solution is simply by right-clicking on your existing solution and saying add new item. This is, again, what you'll see in most intro talks. You'll see down here we have two item template types, user control and templated control. A user control is a very simple type of control. It's a XAML definition that you can incorporate other types of controls that are part of the WinRT SDK that you can use, things like buttons and flip views and things like that. A templated control incorporates styles in the form of XAML, but also an underpinning code file that you can use for projecting out things like dependency properties and that users can then use for that purpose. Let's go ahead and create a templated control for this example. When we create this, you'll see that a couple of files are created. First, we have this folder that's been created called themes, and then underpinning that, we have a XAML document called generic.xaml. Also, we have a custom control class in this C# file that includes a variety of namespace references that you see here. Let me just go ahead and bump up the font. Bad presenter. I should have done this ahead of time. But basically, those two in combination are used to basically construct your control. So here we have our basic definition. Notice we have an inheritance hierarchy we derive from control. And then from there, we can start incorporating the variety of aspects that we want to incorporate. So here's my control in the form of its resource dictionary with styles. We have in here a control template, which is the way in which we lay out our control structure. And for the purpose of this demonstration, let me just go ahead and add a text block here. And we'll give it a font size of, I guess, 32. And then we'll set its text equal to foo, I guess. Visual Studio is not liking me right now. So what I've done here is I've added a control available to me from WinRT and incorporated it into my design. Notice that this is set explicitly, so I can then go back into the main page.xaml definition here. And if I go ahead and then build this, it will show up in my toolbox, and I'm sure you guys have seen this before in previous examples throughout the conference. But generally speaking, you can take these controls, incorporate them, start dragging and dropping on your design surface, or if you wish, start utilizing them within the context of markup directly. So once that's done building, presumably we're going to build at some point. That's lovely. This is known as a wait feature in Visual Studio. Allows you to think about your code while it's building. Allows you to consider the architecture. Yes, there's a question from the audience.
Can't you use louder than JavaScript or a different language? It would just be all the same concepts.
So the question is, had I started in JavaScript or created an HTML-based project template, would all the basic concepts apply? Yes and no. There are different ways in which you create controls within JavaScript, which we'll talk about. But for this example, I just wanted to show basically how it works within XAML. But I will cover a little bit on the JavaScript side of the house. So there's our control there. There's a couple of things worth mentioning about this. Notice that we have in this control our text blocks being rendered. We have obviously the foo being represented here by our text block. Up near at the top, we have, for those who are Silverlight or WPF developers, notice that we have a new declaration for incorporating that prefix for that namespace. So here we have a using statement. We no longer have the CLR-namespace or assembly colon mechanism of incorporating controls. We use this using statement here, and then that allows us to incorporate that going forward. Let's go ahead and customize this a little bit. So maybe I want to make this text block internally to my control a little bit different. So the way I'll do that is through what's called a dependency property. So dependency properties are interesting in the sense that they annotate the existing properties we have available to us in .NET languages by giving us an ability to not only project those things out, but give them default values, respond to change events, and things of that nature. Within Visual Studio, we have a shortcut here called prop DEP that we can then go ahead and display these out. So I'll give this return type. This is a type of string. And I'll just go ahead and call this text to display. And then the owner of this property, of course, is my custom control. And then notice I have here a type called property metadata. Here what I can do is I can provide all kinds of default values if I wanted to. So for example, all blacks are awesome. Got to cater to the audience, I suppose. There you go. So I'll go ahead and build this. And then once that's done, I'll go back into my generic.xaml. Now I need to incorporate this text to display value into my control template. And the way I'll do that is I'll utilize a binding extension, which we have called the template binding. And if you've looked at binding in the past, it's very synonymous with what we're doing here. So I'll go ahead and use text to display. And what this will give me is the ability to actually incorporate the property set on the control within my main page.xaml into this display. So we'll go ahead and call now text to display. Notice that it shows up here. And we'll go say all blacks. Or actually, I'll say wallabies for the win. Right. Now the eval scores are going lower in everyone's opinion. Let's go ahead and hit F5. And so what I've done here is I've created control, set the text to display property. And then once we go ahead and run this code, we should see in that text blocks pricking up that property for the control itself. And that's a very basic sort of simple example of how this all operates and hangs together. From the XAML side, as we'll see in a second, we have a lot of different ways to do this also on the JavaScript side. There we go. So obviously it's clipped, but you get the idea. All right, so let's switch back now to the slides and talk a little bit about some other things. So that's very hello world, you know, how you doing sort of thing. Windows 8 application controls, as I said before, come in two types. We have composite controls and custom controls. So custom controls are that inheritance hierarchy I showed you that derives from control. And these are great because they can be restyled and retemplated as needed. So that allows you to control the layout, the look and feel, expose those properties out to your customers or the people who are using your controls or yourselves. These controls can be built using C#, C++, VB, and targeting XAML. These are language projections that we have available to us within WinRT, as XAML being the sort of lingua franca across all of them to describe structure in the form of markup. JavaScript is another option as well. And for this, we'll utilize markup in the form of HTML, as well as WinJS, or the Windows library for JavaScript. Now, what's interesting about JavaScript is that a lot of the concepts we have within HTML, the way in which we describe types and the way in which we describe structures, blends or kind of migrates perfectly into this new world within WinRT, and we'll see that how that works. The tools that we have available at our disposal include all the ones that we've presumably downloaded. But what's interesting to note here is that WinRT represents an evolution of what we've had before. There's been a bit of a discussion going on right now about, you know, when I'm building WinRT components and I'm building applications for WinRT, am I still using .NET? Is the CLR still around, et cetera, et cetera? If you're building components with C# and VB today, which presumably all of you are here, or if maybe some of you aren't, that's fine, you are still using the .NET framework. You are still loading the CLR into an app domain. And if you don't believe me, you can go ahead and take a look at the dependencies and what's injected into the runtime as it's being loaded. mscoreee.dll is actually shown up as a dependency when you go ahead and load it using any dependency walker type tool. The evolution of metadata here is basically WinRT is writing a love letter to .NET and to COM, telling it, we love the concepts and ideas you brought to the Windows platform so much that we're going to carry them forward and make them better. So the reality is a lot of your skills today carry forward. Presumably a lot of you here are WPF and Silverlight developers. The good news here is you can continue to leverage those existing skills, which is great. Now, that being said, there's a lot of differences at the edges. So if you're taking an application that you've written in Silverlight and or WPF and you wish to port it to Windows 8, there's a few things that you need to be aware of. So first and foremost, the application object and app model is a little bit different. Let's not forget that applications that run in the sort of Windows Store app mode, or Metro, I guess we'll call it, that's different in Windows 8. We have this ability to suspend and terminate applications. We also have this ability to propagate capabilities for our AppX packages. So capabilities are those capabilities denoted in metadata that tell the consumer of your app from the App Store, I need access to, you know, the network, I need access to local storage, etc. So Silverlight apps have application parts as part of the deployment package, and these can be downloaded on demand. And Windows 8 has these choices too, but the APIs are a little bit different. So in Silverlight apps, we could do it a little bit differently. The architecture of Windows runtime at its core is basically focused around projecting types and languages into the application space. You'll notice that as you move to this model, things do look differently in that sense. Touch and input using those concepts within Windows 8 do different things. We no longer have things like mouse-specific input events. We have pointer events, and you probably heard about those in previous sessions. Windows 8 Apps uses XAML for its UI definition, and there's basic controls there that you can use to build up these composite type controls. So we have things like buttons and list boxes and things like that. And we also have containers, things like borders, grids, etc. We don't have things like specialty controls like panorama control, things that you would have seen in Silverlight. However, that being said, we do have other types of controls unique to Windows 8, like semantic zoom or flip view. These and other types of controls will cater themselves to the UX model that is utilized within Windows 8. And although you can use the same control structure for your original WPF and Silverlight apps, you have to be aware of the fact that things are going to look different. And it's worth noting that there is a porting structure that's going to be in play there from a control perspective. Some other things that look a little bit different as well as feel a little bit the same, animations, transitions, and visual states, those are largely the same. Media is handled somewhat differently. The DRM capabilities of media within Windows 8 is a little bit different than Silverlight and WPF XAML. URIs are handled differently. There's no support for relative URIs. And then file and storage APIs rely on the awaits, the await and asynchronous capabilities of Windows 8 for doing file access. So those are some subtle differences you'll see as you port your controls over to Windows 8. So to this gentleman's point about JavaScript, there's a number of controls that we have available to us to take advantage of when building out applications, as well as controls. And with that, let's go ahead and see an example of that. So I'm going to jump back into Windows 8. And I have an existing project here. What this project is showing you is some examples of how we can utilize controls in WinJS for denoting sections of our page. So we have this capability here called data-win, or data-dash is a metadata concept incorporated within HTML5. And its purpose is effectively to basically describe metadata in a way that doesn't really have to force you in a certain direction. So the way we would do metadata in the past is we would do injection into things like styles, or we would do some really gnarly things with hidden input fields and things like that. With HTML5, we have these metadata attributes called data-dash attributes, and that allows you to basically denote any type of metadata you want on individual elements. In the case of targeting JavaScript for Windows 8, the way we describe control structures is through these data-dash attributes in some cases. I say in some cases because other examples of where controls can lie depend upon how you're using them. So in this example here, we're utilizing an input range. So this is these are input tags that we have inside of HTML that we can certainly use for describing the types of controls or components that we wish to use. So if we want to use a range or a list of radio buttons, we can use those as well. So looking at this example here, this one, by the way, comes from the Windows SDK. If you haven't downloaded, there's tons of great examples in it. But these are some of the essential controls you'll see within JavaScript. Notice here that they're styled appropriately to Windows 8, and they simply incorporate those styles available to us within WinJS. These are nothing more, nothing less than simply input tags, and so they get styled accordingly for that, which is why it's such a natural feeling when targeting this using JavaScript or markup when targeting Windows 8 from that perspective. But the way in which we can construct these controls is pretty simple. So you may have attended Don's talk. I don't know if he talked about this, but we have off the WinJS namespace, if you will, we have this class definition for defining classes. We can then consume those classes in a number of different ways and start annotating them accordingly. This is all done in JavaScript, of course. This is also allowing us to define an event model for things like ready events, loaded events, etc. And this is the way in which we project into the Windows 8 runtime. That being said, when targeting this from a new perspective, my inclination is to target from XAML. However, for a lot of you, I totally appreciate that you want to build upon your existing skill sets, and you can totally do that within WinJS. But that's a concept that I tend to favor for XAML itself. But there's lots of concepts there that you can utilize for WinJS itself. Let's talk a little bit about some of the user interface patterns that are present within Windows 8, because these will have an impact upon the controls that you make. So there's a lot of things that you need to be cautious of or conscious of when targeting Windows 8, things like the layout mechanisms we have. As you've seen, we've had three different project template types that we can use for things like grid layout and the like. Navigation, of course, is another thing that comes into play when we have this concept of pages going back and forth. Also, commanding, the types of controls that we'll use there for things like buttons and controls that will take input through touch and mouse and keyboard input. Scrolling content, of course, is another big one. So if you're using, say, like a flip view or a grid control, those will certainly have to incorporate scrolling content. You can virtualize a lot of that scrolling content. Presenting data, of course, is another one which comes into the design aesthetic, and there are a lot of different ways in which you can do that. The great thing about a lot of this is that there are some great building blocks for you to use with Windows 8. And these are some of the sort of control patterns that you'll see propagating within the Windows 8 SDK. So we have a variety of controls like buttons, checkboxes, ranges, sliders, toggles, switches, et cetera. And these, of course, will provide a good way of building these things out. We also have a set of commanding patterns that we can also use, which is where my slider is. There you go. So we have our app bar that we can target as well, and a variety of other controls that are contextual in nature. So things like flyouts, message dialogs, and settings panes. These are interesting, though, in the sense that they actually have an impact on in which you design your application. As we'll see a little bit later on, there's a variety of different custom controls that you can build for supporting these types of commanding patterns. Touch, of course, is another concept as well that is deeply important for Windows 8. I don't know how many of you saw the 82-inch monster touchscreen display down in the hub. This is a photo I snapped of a couple of guys playing a game. It's key to everything that you're doing within Windows 8 itself. And the reason for that is because there is a touch language within Windows 8. There's a lot of different gestures that you can use. These are concise touch interactions, and they are consistently implemented throughout the system. So when building out controls for Windows 8, you need to be conscious of the fact that these things are there. If you do control development, you do it in a consistent manner, that gives your users more confidence when using your controls. So for some examples, instead of utilizing a checkbox, for example, you may want to look at utilizing in a touch environment certain types of gestures, so the ability to actually denote a selected context. And there's a lot of different ways in which you can do this. But swiping down, for example, is one way in which you can actually indicate a selection. Some other examples include being able to browse content with touch. So being able to iterate left to right, but also this notion of going in and out of content through concepts like semantic zoom. The good news here is that semantic zoom is an aspect in which you can easily incorporate to your existing controls, and we'll see an example of that. Providing feedback, of course, is useful because it allows the people who are using your components to know that something's being done with them. So whether that includes a slight tweening effect or an enlargement of your control as things are being selected, those things are important. And the good news is that there's a lot of APIs and as well as a lot of third-party libraries that are being built or have been built that allow you to do this. It's important when you're using controls that your content flows with your finger. So people, as they tap and then hold and then move the content around, giving a live update as how that's happening is critical. Of course, this also propagates to interactions that can be made reversible. So here I may want to swipe down to select, but also swipe up to deselect. Of course, more than one finger, being able to zoom in and out using multiple fingers, controlling interactions through those means. And then finally, you want to make sure that your interactions are untimed, because a lot of times it can be hard to invoke these actions for people who are not familiar with the touch language. So let's see some example of touch support within Windows 8, specifically for controls. So for this example here, I'm going to be using the simulator, obviously, because I've got a machine here that doesn't have touch through its display. I'm going to have to deploy through the simulator. But the great news is that actually the simulator is excellent. It's got a lot of capabilities that you can use for mimicking things like orientation switching, touch, input, and a whole host of other things as well, including things like geolocation and things that are important for the types of apps you're building. Again, this one comes from the Windows SDK. Again, you can download this from code.msdn.com. I think there's over 100 examples that you can see there. What you see here are four controls on this page. Down here at the bottom, we have a text box in the form of XAML. We have an extended text box control, which is derived from text box class, which is this orange one here. And then we have two custom controls, one that implements a text value pattern. And the reason why this is important is because as you're interacting with these controls, depending upon what mode Windows 8 is operating, the soft keyboard may be displayed. The input manager may be displayed for obviously propagating those values. So as I'm operating on these with a mouse, you're not seeing that soft keyboard come in. And the reason for that is because I'm actually not interacting this with touch. But if I change this to touch now and switch from a control type, you'll notice that in certain cases, there are controls built into XAML, or rather WinRT, that automatically detect touch input and will provide the soft keyboard for you. If you're implementing your own controls, however, that can be a bit of a challenge because there are going to be examples where you'll want to support touch events. So taking a look at this, in this example here, we have a custom control, and we'll see the code in just a second, that if I interact with touch, we get a keyboard not being displayed in this instance as I'm tapping on this control. And the reason for that is because there's a text value pattern implementation, which I'll show you, that you have to implement. So if you implement a custom control and you need to interact with the soft keyboard, there's a simple derivation that you need to actually implement in order for that to be supported. So let's take a look at how that works now. So in this example here, I have a number of custom controls on my page. And for my custom control here, for the first one that you saw where no keyboard was being displayed, no soft keyboard was being displayed, that was because there was no what's called an automation peer registered for the text box itself. So in the first case here, we have this custom input box one, which allows me to control the way in which we have automation operating against the control itself. We have this ability of registering what's called an automation peer, and this is how we actually denote a class for controlling the types of inputs that we want. So in the case of touch, and also touch that incorporates a soft keyboard for text input, that's how we would control that. In this instance here, though, my animation peer is not implementing, or rather derived from, the appropriate text value class for receiving that input, which is why you didn't see the keyboard being displayed. But in the second example where I have a custom control, we actually implement that. So if we go ahead and scroll down here, we have virtually the same code here. We have an automation peer registered, which is part of the control hierarchy. And then down here, you'll notice that not only do I derive from framework element automation peer, which is the base class for it, but I also implement the interfaces iText provider and iValue provider. Implementing these interfaces will tell Windows 8 that, yes, I require soft keyboard input. So when that's registered and then a touch event is registered through a pointer on the custom control, it will then display the soft keyboard for receiving that text and then propagating that value back. So it's very much similar to the way in which dependency properties work within XAML. So that's one way in which you can get touch interaction events occurring within a custom control. As I said before, there's a whole boatload of community libraries available to you that are being built today for Windows 8, which is great. And what I'd like to do is show you some examples now. So switching back to Windows 8, presumably. There we go. All right. There is a great framework called Callisto, which is being built out by Tim Heuer of Microsoft and friends. And this is a control toolkit available up on GitHub. Its purpose is to basically provide a set of controls that are missing, if you will, from the SDK. And you can download this today from GitHub. And I'll just like to show you what that looks like now, if I have it. There you go. So these are a number of the controls that have been built by Tim. So you've got a variety of other controls like flyout controls. So these are context menus, if you will, or context controls that will be displayed. These are useful in the context of user interaction. Settings dialog, you can obviously control the way in which settings are displayed. There's an API for displaying the settings charm, if you will, but you can also put in content in there that will control its width of the settings. So by default, it's narrow. So you'll see something that looks like this. So this is a sort of canonical view of settings that you might want to use. But another example might be if you want to display more than that content, there's a wide option as well. So you can use it a little bit more wider there to display more content. So it's just a custom control that Tim's built. As I said before, the, when you're working with touch, there's a lot of different sort of forms of feedback that are innate that you want to provide to the user. So here, so for example, you can see, I don't know if that's coming through, but you can see that these are sort of tap gestures that control basically how the control looks when interacting with them. And these are nice because they allow the user to understand that there's something interactive. There's tactile feedback being projected through the display here to show me what's happening. There's some interesting ones as well, dynamic text block. There's a web view extension as well, which is really nice. There's a flip view indicator, which are, you know, providing you where you are in the cycle of items within your collection. A watermark text box, so being able to provide some feedback to the user of, hey, this is something you should do. Enter some text. These and other types of controls are part of the Callisto framework. It's a great framework to look at in terms of source code to see how these things are built. But these are largely built for just providing or filling in the cracks of things that are missing within the Windows SDK today. Another example of controls that are being built, there's a WinRT XAML toolkit. This is available on CodePlex. And these are lists of tests that have been written to test out the capabilities of these types of controls that have been built. There's a kind of a pretty one here called a cascading text block, which is nice. So you can see there's a custom control that will simply flow in some text, and through slider controls, you can control basically how those elements are being drawn as they're being displayed. So you get a sense of how that's actually being projected. There you go. So these are other controls you can certainly use. And they're wonderful because they're filling in the cracks left open by Microsoft in the SDK itself. Obviously, Microsoft can't implement every single control, and it's reliant upon us in the community to certainly implement many of those. Now, that being said, Telerik has gone ahead and implemented some of its own controls, so we've certainly taken a stab of filling in some of those cracks as well. And what I'd like to show you is a set of controls that we have called RAG controls for Metro. It's the most elaborate switcher I've seen. So we have a set of controls as well. We support both XAML and HTML for these controls. Excuse me. Thank you. I'm a software guy, not a hardware guy. There you go. So we have a set of controls for Windows 8. These are called RAG controls for Metro. You can download the beta today. We haven't, you know, officially shipped these yet, but the beta is available. And what I'd like to show you is just some of the controls that we have. So we're well known at Telerik for having a lot of highly visual controls. So these are a set of chart controls that we have. So if you're wanting to display data in the form of a chart, we certainly have that. These are XAML controls, but we certainly have a similar set of controls for HTML JavaScript as well. So you can see here we have bar series, we have line series, area series, scatter series, pie series. These are all interactive, so you can certainly use these in the form of touch input, and they will accordingly adjust based on their input. So a variety of chart controls. One thing that shocked us was there's no date picker in the Windows SDK. So we wrote one. So, you know, you need a date, we got one. So some interesting things in terms of, you know, how you might propagate dates through a UI itself. We also have things like gauges. So these are good for dashboard type applications. So for those who saw the Intergen booth downstairs where they're showing race scores and things like that, you could actually do an update to the UI here using the content or data coming from those controls. We have a new control that hasn't been seen publicly. This is the first time it's being shown. It's called a hub tile. And this is basically implementing a sort of hub-like experience within applications. So you don't have to go into Windows 8. You can actually utilize a control like a hub tile within your own application. So it's very Inception-like, right? It's Windows 8 within Windows 8, I guess. So. And then we also have a time picker as well, which is kind of interesting. We have support for semantic zoom. So you know, this is very easy to implement. In semantic zoom, there's a couple of elements you have to propagate in XAML. There's a semantic zoom in and semantic zoom out. And they're just basically placeholders for the look and feel you'll have for that zoom in and zoom out perspective. What's interesting about this is that some of these controls are being utilized by customers today. So I just want to show you an example of that. You guys all saw what was being done by Marker Metro. These guys are awesome. And what would be more awesome is if I could actually get the tablet I have here to turn on. I'm trying to get this to turn on. Oh, no. Yeah, I know. I'm pressing that. There you go. Aha, there we go. That very secure password they have. Perfect. So they implemented a custom control that implements semantic zoom down here. So you'll notice that as I'm pinching here, this is implementing a touch gesture input and then using semantic zoom to basically switch the control after a certain threshold is crossed, which is great. What's also interesting is they're actually using those same controls that you saw in RAG controls for Metro for displaying weights of babies. So if those of you have kids, you'll know that when they're first born, you're always like happy to see they're in the 95th percentile. And there's what these are is just basically a graph that shows you from the bottom fifth to the top 95th percentile and where this baby here fits within that context. This is actually using our RAG controls chart, which is nice. Another example of a control that's using some of the graphs that we've built, our custom controls, is Datacom has built this pretty neat application. No, not you. And this is actually integrating with a back-end CRM system. So this is all live data hitting a CRM system. And you'll notice here they're using a bar chart here for displaying data for a number of different products that are on the screen. So you get a sense of how you might want to use these controls in the context of a Windows 8 app. These controls are extremely powerful because they allow you to basically focus on the concerns that you're looking at. And they're also really nice and elegant because they have that aesthetic, that look and feel that's certainly to the Windows 8 metaphor or Metro metaphor that we have carried forward. So switch back to you. There you go. Some things to consider. I want to share with you some of the things that we at Telerik are thinking about when designing controls for Windows 8. These are actual things that we've written down on whiteboards when thinking about the types of things we want to support in terms of our controls. So compliance, obviously, with the user experience criteria. There's actually a UX guidelines document, a PDF that's been published by Microsoft that's available online today. I highly recommend you go through it and read through the interactions and gestures and the ways in which you'll display things within a Windows 8 app to see how those things are done. We wanted to make our controls touch-centric, not only for XAML, but also for HTML. And we wanted that same experience to be shared across both stacks. That's important, right? We want to make sure there's consistency there. We also wanted to make sure that the API exposed the developer not only in terms of markup through XAML, but also through the class libraries that we expose is very consumable. So that's something you have to think about. Fast and fluid on target devices obviously is important. We want to make sure that this operates and operates well across all types of devices, no matter what sort of CPU architecture they have. Data binding, of course, is a key aspect for being productive as a developer, and that's something that we think about very, very consciously. So we make sure that we support data binding in a very rich way for properties exposed through the controls that we have. And then finally, we want to make sure that all these controls are designable both within Blend and within Visual Studio. The good news here is that Blend actually does a much better job in terms of rendering out custom controls that you have within your projects. In the back in the day, you know, it wouldn't always do a great job, but it's something to think about. Now, I talked a little bit about design being important. These are actually some of the schematics that we actually designed ahead of time before, creating these controls. So an example of a date time picker, we can see here that we're actually actively consciously thinking about the user interface guidelines when users are interacting with our controls. And so this is something you'll have to think about when designing your own controls. thinking about, you know, what is the carousel behavior between a mouse and touch input? How does that differ? Some other examples of how we looked at the date picker. So we start with a select date on the left, and then as the picker is being displayed, you know, do we want to display that as a calendar? Do we want to have it as a small finite control, or do we want to have it as a picker box when they zoom in and out, for example? Another example is thinking about if they do a tap or a mouse click, how we might display that to the user. This is the actual design that we settled on. One of the things that we're debating internally right now is the OK cancel buttons at the bottom. Is this something that might be appropriate? Or would it be more appropriate to navigate away or switch focus from the control to indicate the fact that we want to commit that date? And then finally, thinking about the time picker itself, how do we want to display that? Do we want this in a sort of Android style of up and down buttons above and below the numbers? Or do we want to make it something where the user can select using a variety of different controls? These are other things you'll have to consciously think about when targeting Windows 8 because they're important. These are things that are obviously critical to the design of your applications. What I'd like to do is finish off with another example of an application that we built using HTML. This is a set of controls for our HTML components. Unfortunately, this does use a remote data source, which means that I'm at the whim of the internet gods at the moment. You can see just barely at the top that we have this sort of request call that's being done, but it's not giving me any love right now, so I don't know if this data is actually going to show up. But what we have here is economic data being displayed for two countries, New Zealand and Australia, using the controls that we have built onto our page. We do update layout based on the result set that comes back. So, for example, if we get rid of Australia and compare to Azerbaijan, for example, you can see that gets updated. We do have tap capabilities as well, so you can easily bring up the application bar and change, you know, the types of countries or the time period. These controls are easily incorporated within the context of your application because they're designed to be as such. But unfortunately, I'm just not getting the data being returned here. All right. So this is a part of the presentation where I show you all kinds of related content. And unfortunately, the only thing I can say is if you attended any of the app sessions earlier in the week, good news. You got a lot of what was necessary. Being on a Friday, it's not always great to, you know, be there because I can't actually share with you other sessions that have been that are coming. But definitely worth checking out. Please feel free to check out all the resources. Some of the resources that I would recommend include code.msn.com, Channel 9, obviously, for a lot of video tutorials. Also, Pluralsight. They're downstairs. They've got some wonderful Windows 8 courses, including a new one from Ian Griffiths that's about to be published. Ian on Twitter indicated that he's updated the course, and he's going to be publishing it shortly. He did a fabulous course on controls and layout and how to build these things yourself within Pluralsight, so go give those guys some love. Another example, the Callisto controls up on GitHub. There's just a boatload of controls there that you can go check out. And of course, Telerik.com, you can find our controls there if you wish. So thanks a lot. I have 2 minutes left. Are there any questions? All right, guys. Thanks a lot.